live from the Quad Cities with Morgan Otier and Kyle Keel. This is Quad Cities Live.
America needs nurses, and Trinity College of Nursing and Health Sciences is here to tell us about new ways they're recruiting the caretakers of the future.
And we are diving deep into the latest climate assessment from the Prairie Rivers Network and National Wildlife Federation. What Weather Now is telling us about the future here in the Quad Cities region.
And this weekend, head over to Skeleton Key Art and Antiques in Rock Island, not only to take a look at the incredible work of area artists and vendors, but for a really fun furniture sale.
You're watching Quad Cities Live on this Wednesday, April 17th. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Kyle Keel.
I'm Morgan Otier. Now, Earth Day is on Monday of next week, but on Sunday, there is a neighborhood cleanup event hosted by Public House in Davenport.
And it's getting popular and popular every year. Here from the Public House are organizers Mackenzie Miller and Andrea McCreary. Thank you, ladies, both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Of course.
So obviously, this is a very important event here as we approach Earth Day. So before we get to that, Public House, it's been a popular spot here for the last several years in Davenport. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, definitely. Our Earth Day event, we've been doing it for about 7 or 8 years now, and we just want to give back to the community and have a fun day picking up garbage.
Yes, 7 or 8 years, wow, I cannot get over that. So you have been hosting this almost every single year that Public House has been open at this point.
Yes.
So why did you decide to start doing this event? Because I know Jonna has lots of locations of different bars and things around the Quad Cities, but this is very specific to Public House.
Yeah, you know, over on Northwest Davenport area, there's a lot of businesses that are tight-knit over there, and, you know, we just noticed garbage in the ditches and things like that, and we just want to take care of our space as well as others, and we just like to pick up the area.
Andrea, I mean, it is. There's some businesses over there, but it also is very residential. I'm sure the neighborhood appreciates when you guys do this every year.
Yeah. Yep. We are a huge neighborhood bar, so it's really cool to come together as a community and have all of our customers and people that hear about it and just come and join us and help us clean up our community.
And so we're seeing some video now of years past of the event. So most years you do this no matter the weather. I know last year you had to delay it a couple years, so it's never going to get canceled. But kind of walk us through the day, because all the activities start at 9 o'clock in the morning, right?
Yep, you start check in at 9 a.m. at Public House. After that, we clean up for about 3 hours in the area. After cleanup, we invite you back to Public House for our Planet Party, which has live music, a food truck, free Stella for all of our volunteers, so we have a lot going on.
Okay. Free Stella, there you go.
Yeah, I know. They brought us free Stella today, which we appreciate. So each volunteer is going to get some supplies, which you guys brought with you today. So kind of go over what those supplies are. I mean, they seem, you know, pretty basic, like nothing that would confuse anyone.
No. Yeah. I mean, basically your safety vest, your gloves, your trash bags, and of course your trash grabber.
I couldn't wait to use this.
I'm gonna use it.
Pick up the can.
No, that is awesome that you guys have the trash grabbers, because I think when I picture the event, and I don't think it would be a problem at all, but just picking up trash, you know, with your hands and things like that. So you guys got the volunteers pretty hooked up. Andrea, how am I dressing as a volunteer on the day of?
So we would recommend wearing shoes that you really don't care about, because people get really down and dirty to get all the trash picked up. We get really into it. Just kind of older clothes that you wouldn't mind if they got dirty. And weather appropriate too. I think it's going to be maybe a little on the chillier side, but once we get closer to that, we'll see. Then just dress weather appropriate.
Well, and I bet you get hot too. Like by the time the three hours is over.
So maybe hold off on the sweaters and things like that.
Yeah.
So obviously you kind of talked about the Planet Party afterwards. So that's happening afternoon, correct?
Yep. It'll start at 2 o'clock. Okay. We have live music by Kale Bowie from 12 to 2, and then QC Fork in the Road food truck will be parked out front at noon. So,
all right, so it's important to note that obviously the Public House, it's a 21 and up bar, but people under 21, they're invited to come and celebrate, and get some food before.
Yeah, they can't
before
have
they
head these.
Out.
Yes.
No, yeah.
No. We brought them for you though. So.
Yeah, well, thank you. Should we bring into it?
Yeah.
So obviously you're gonna have the food truck out there that obviously everyone under 21 can take advantage of as well after.
Absolutely.
After they do good and help clean up Northwest Davenport.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason why you guys brought these here today is not because I love Stella, which I do, but because everybody that is 21 and up that is involved this weekend in the event, you guys are offering them a free Stella.
Yes. Correct. All volunteers get free Stella, and it will be Absolutely. On tap, so nice and crisp for you.
Okay, that is super awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys have been talking about every year this event grows. When you first started out, you said you had like 10 to 15 people, probably just really like regulars there at Public House. It has grown every single year, and you guys actually have a goal for this year.
Yeah, we're hoping to get anywhere between 50 and 60 people, hopefully.
Okay.
The more the merrier. So help us clean up Northwest Davenport.
Help them clean up and help them reach that goal, because really, what a cool thing that you guys do. You know, Neighborhood Bar doesn't necessarily have to care about all the things that you guys care about. But that's why people love you. I mean, talk a little bit, Andra, about your regulars. And because you guys, you have like a huge following.
Yeah. So I've been bartending there for 5 years now?
Good for you.
Yeah. So it's been super fun. Anybody that knows me knows I love my job.
Yes.
All my regulars are super fun. I mean, I've been on vacations with them. Like,
that
I've made,
is so cool.
I've made lasting friendships there, and just to have and host events like this to bring everybody together outside of the bar is really fun, because people get in their trucks and they'll drive and fill the bed of their trucks with trash.
Awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's really cool to see all of us out together helping the community outside of the bar.
Making that community connection, that's
very
important.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. All right, here is the info for everybody. The Earth Day cleanup event this Sunday at Public House in Northwest Davenport. It starts at 9 a.m. with the Planet Party starting at noon. You can register online at extremecleanup.org. All you're going to have to do is head to the website on your screen and just look for the event that is happening at Public House. Ladies, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great time this weekend.
Thank you. We look forward to it.
Yeah. Good weather. Fingers crossed. Yeah. I'll give you that answer here coming up. Well, next on Quad Cities Live, a new climate report released shows impacts that climate change could potentially have on the Quad Cities in the future. We'll learn more about the Quad Cities Climate Assessment after the break.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
Living in the Quad Cities, we are prone to many different weather hazards throughout the year. Tornadoes and hail are obviously top of mind after yesterday, along with flooding, drought, extreme temperatures, and even winter storms. A new report is now showing that more weather extreme events caused by climate change could impact the Quad Cities, perhaps in a negative way in the future. Nina Struess joins us now to talk more about the report recently released and what we can do to reduce the negative risks in the future. Nina is the River Health and Resiliency Organizer at Prairie Rivers Network. Nina, thank you so much for coming on Quad Cities Live today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So real quick, let's give the viewers an idea of what you do in your job at Prairie Rivers Network.
Sure. Well, this has been my primary focus within the past 9 months since being with it. Yeah. So a lot of it has been community outreach and conversations and collaboration with figuring out what are the community identified climate risks. What are those concerns? And obviously, we're hoping to work towards protecting and improving the health of the river as well, but also the communities that surround the river too.
All right. So let's talk about this report. This is a very lengthy report, so I can understand why the past 9 months have been very busy for you. This is about 70 plus pages long here. So this is a report that you've teamed up with a couple other organizations to identify these risks.
Yeah, so this was initiated by the National Wildlife Federation, who has experience doing reports such as this. And we were pulled into the equation to really bring that community aspect and make sure that this assessment was driven by community members. And then from there, we also pulled in the Discovery Partners Institute with the University of Illinois Extension. They are the leaders in providing us with the modeling and the data and research that you see in there.
And there is a lot of different models on here that indicated that if we continue on the path that we are based on how quickly our Earth is warming, what kind of I guess, outcomes we could have in certain weather events. So obviously we talk about how climate change is happening. It's a scientific fact, and we have a couple of maps to show you here. This one is the warming map. This shows the average temperature over time, over a period between 1990 and 2019, compared to a previous period between 1895 and 1924. And you can certainly see that we've got a 1 to 2 degree difference. That doesn't seem like much, but we're talking a global scale here. That can be a lot. This is average temperature.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you and I were having this conversation, right, is that sometimes the numbers seem small.
Yeah.
But when you really think about the history, especially if you've been here in the Quad Cities for several years, and think about the way that the weather patterns have changed, how rain falls has very different now, the amount of heat that we have, how extreme that heat is. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like much, but it is quite a bit.
And with the warmer temperatures, the more extreme temperatures, we get bigger weather events, and that can lead to more precipitation. So we also have a map that shows the increased amount of precipitation, and you can see there's generally a 10 to 20% increase in the amount of annual total precipitation in Eastern Iowa and Western Illinois. And we found that out back in 2021 when we had the new climatological averages come out, and it showed each month was seeing more and more precipitation. So obviously part of this is to identify ways to help communities adapt to the climate risk. So talk about kind of those findings.
Yeah, definitely. So as I mentioned, we wanted to really pull the community and see what are the biggest risks. And so, as you mentioned, flooding, both river flooding and flooding from flash flooding seem to be of the biggest concerns, followed by extreme heat and drought as well. And so from there, really taking that, providing modeling, see what that looks like by the early, mid, and end of century, which doesn't seem too far away,
no,
but it's not that far away.
It's not.
And then from there, seeing where the biggest risks are, and next steps would be to start identifying ways that we can start to work with nature, or we can complement nature through nature-based solutions, whether it is from an infrastructure standpoint or providing, you know, looking at ways to, again, how do we soak in all of that extra precipitation?
Right.
Can we find other ways to make it go instead of it just running off into the next city or town?
And when we're talking about flooding, we're talking about areas like from the Isle of Capri and the I-74 bridge and points downstream toward the Rock Island Arsenal and Nahant Marsh, talking about those areas that could see increased flooding within the next couple of decades if we continue along this path.
Yeah, and there is some alarming models in there that does show that, and it is kind of hard for some people to understand that it's not just the river, you know, coming up and flowing. It is a lot of those heavier precipitation events, the runoff that is a result of that, and that water really having nowhere else to go. So there are new locations that we are identifying as potentially being flooded by, you know, the end of this decade even.
And we found for some information for farmers as well, like we may have more farming days because of the warmer temperatures, but you add the potential drought and the potential increased precipitation, that can kind of take away from them as well.
Yeah, you can see effects in the yield, right? So the corn, soy yields, depending on where we're at in the century, can definitely be affected by that. Also, too, an increase in runoff can affect our water quality as well. So thinking of ways that we can, again, how can we work with nature? What can we implement to help to reduce some of those effects?
So obviously, this isn't only environmental impacts. This can be economic impacts as well.
Definitely.
Down the line. So let's talk about part of this is also solutions that we have to adapt to these changes that we are seeing and maybe kind of prevent some of the negative impacts. So a lot of that includes more green space.
Yeah, so it's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah.
Right?
So
we like to talk about, right? It's not all doom and gloom. There is a lot of, especially if you're feeling very heavy, listening to us talk about this,
exactly.
There's hope in there.
Yeah.
And we went to the community and asked those community members, where do you see as potential projects or opportunities to be able to implement more nature-based solutions, things to help improve the wetlands that we already have, forests, our rivers. And then from there, those are within the report. But you're right, looking at areas where there's vacant lots, can we implement more green spaces? Do we have the potential to put in more trees to help bring down that urban heat island effect, you know, affect those temperatures?
Yeah.
Can we start talking with important leaders about ways to provide nature-based solutions that help with that infiltration into the ground?
Exactly.
Native gardens, rain gardens, those types of things to really be able to implement within our communities.
Yeah, and it's important to note here that we're talking about climate. We're not talking about day-to-day weather, so we can't you know, yesterday's tornadoes, that was weather. We can't connect that to climate change. It's the overall scale that we're connecting it to. So basically the findings in this report, they're just projections. This isn't a guarantee that it will happen. Maybe if we took some of these measures,
absolutely,
we can prevent the worst from happening in the future.
That's such a good point. And also too, we're really utilizing this as a jumping point to start fostering conversations. Yeah. You know, the projections through the end of the century are really important as we start to build other forms of infrastructure,
yeah,
city planning and development, where we have the opportunity to really work with nature,
yeah,
and help improve those risks versus just continuing to go down the path that we're already on.
And this isn't a report, hey, we're done.
I mean, no,
this is ongoing.
It's not.
This is ongoing.
It is.
So if people want to contact you with ways to maybe help out,
I would love to hear it. So yeah, the next steps of this report is really talking with more community members. Again, if you're reading through this and you're concerned, if you're one of the businesses that we've outlined, we would love to have conversations, mm-hmm, and start learning more about where your biggest concerns are. Are there barriers? Are there ideas for projects to be, yeah, implemented and conversations to be had? It's going to be a constantly evolving, living document. And so I welcome any sort of outreach as we begin these next steps.
Well, I tell you what, I've only scratched the surface with this assessment, and if you want to read this entire assessment, you can do so by going to our website, kwqc.com. You can click on Quad Cities Live on the menu, or you can search Quad Cities Live in the search bar, and we will have that link for that full report. And hopefully you get some good feedback from the community, more feedback than what you've already gotten.
Absolutely, I hope so. Right. And also too, if they don't want to do the full report, the executive summary sums it up really, really well. Or if you can just read the summaries of each section too, if you want just a quick overview.
Okay.
I mean, that is helpful because I know not everybody has the time to go,
yes,
through the 72-page report right away.
8 pages versus 72, you choose. All right,
yes.
Nina Struz, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Well, coming up on Quad Cities Live, the Trinity College of Nursing and Health Sciences is here to talk about its 125-year history and new programs to support the next generation of frontline workers.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
Well, you've probably heard it before. There is a nursing shortage in the United States and right here in the Quad Cities. Trinity College of Nursing and Health Sciences is doing everything it can to bring more people into the medical field. Tracy Pulvorty is the chancellor there. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Yes, I can't wait to just kind of get started because there's just so much to talk about with this. Tell us a little bit about nursing itself. It is one of the fastest growing professions.
It actually is. Healthcare professions are fast growing. Nursing, I think, is expected to grow 6 to 7% within over the next year. We've been combating a nursing shortage actually for more than the past decade. And so at Trinity College, we really are looking at ways to get students with various backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You may have a previous degree, you may have no college experience, but we want to make it efficient and effective for students to come into healthcare.
Exactly, and we will get into all of the different ways that you guys are doing that. So the average age of nurses is also changing. Tell us about why that is.
Yeah, I think COVID had a great impact on the average age of the bedside nurse. We saw with COVID a lot of nurses reaching, mm-hmm, near retirement age, and we were in just such an upheaval. Things were changing, and they took that opportunity to exit the profession. The upside is the average age of the nurse in Illinois is probably around 30 some years of age.
Wow.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's our job to keep them in the profession now. Yeah. And so we can get a full longevity out of them.
Well, tell us about some of the ways, I suppose, that you guys are encouraging students to become nurses.
Yeah. One of the neat things that we just signed the beginning of March was with Augustana College, yeah, here in Rock Island. We refer to it as the 2+2 agreement. Okay. This is really a unique agreement in that any student who applies to Augustana College and is accepted will automatically be accepted to Trinity College as well.
Wow.
They will do 2 years at Augustana, and then they can do their junior and senior year at Trinity College and graduate with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree from Trinity College.
So this is really going to help get qualified nurses into hospitals, into clinics, into nursing homes. People may not recognize it, but the first couple of years of a college education is a lot of gen ed types of things. So Absolutely. When they do these next 2 years with Trinity, there's going to be a lot more hands-on opportunities.
Absolutely. They will be within the clinical setting within the first semester of coming to our program. Our mission is that we use innovative teaching and learning strategies. We have a lot of technology at the college, a lot of high-fidelity simulation. We now have a new energized radiography lab where our radiography students can come in and actually take x-rays. They do that on what are called phantoms. We aren't just randomly x-raying individuals, but that hands-on experience really is what adult learners want. Yeah. They learn in the classroom, they go into the lab, and then they translate that over into the hospital setting. And as I said, they'll be doing that within the first semester, taking care of actual patients.
That's amazing. And for nurses that have gone through the program already, or students, what has the response been like from them being able to do some of these things and get that kind of real world experience?
Yes, they love our technology that we have. Yeah. They, you know, it really is a benefit to the student to do a procedure in a lab. And when I'm talking about mannequins now are 3G, 4G, Bluetooth-enabled, yeah, and our faculty are actually speaking for them.
Wow.
Their vital signs, our faculty can control the vital signs so they can make a heart rate go up. These mannequins can actually bleed. They can put a urinary catheter in and get a fluid returned back. They can start an IV on these mannequins. So it truly is. They speak to them. They can have a seizure. They can pass out.
The technology is incredible.
Yeah.
That just blows me away. Speaking of experience, you are also offering a healthcare experience type of summer camp.
Yes.
This sounds like a really immersive opportunity, and it's for high school students.
It is.
Okay.
Yes, it's in July. I believe this is our fourth year. It is a tremendous camp. We have the Life Flight helicopter land for them.
Oh, cool.
They are in the hospital working in the ER. They're one-on-one with either a nurse. It could be a phlebotomist, it could be a medical laboratory scientist that they're working with, but they spend the week, they get to job shadow with that individual,
yeah.
They come back to the college, we debrief them, they have some training before they go into the hospital setting, learning about patient rights and privacy and such, but it is a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I mean, for a student that is potentially thinking of going into college for nursing, or even if you are not and you just don't have a clue what you want to do when you go to college, this could give you a good idea if, you know, the medical field is for you.
Absolutely.
So we have that information as well. It is July 22nd through 26th. It's from 8 a.m. to noon each day, $30 registration. You just have to be 16 years old to take part in this camp, and make sure that you apply soon, though. I believe the deadline to apply is May 1st, and you can do that at trinitycollegeqc.edu. So you also mentioned to us that you have some new faculty. Tell us about kind of, you know, how you get those new nurses and those new faculty members to join.
Yes, absolutely. Our faculty, because there is a faculty shortage that feeds into this nursing shortage, we are always looking for students who show great potential.
To teach.
Yes, absolutely. Tap them on the shoulder, get them involved. And we've had some success with that. But now, I would say that our faculty are truly experts in the areas that they teach. And I don't think people realize that within nursing, we have disciplines and professions, whether it's mother baby or pediatrics or emergency care. And I would say that our faculty are not only excellent educators, but they are practitioners, so they know what they are teaching.
Very cool. It sounds very like an exciting program, very immersive and hands-on. And if you want to learn more about the programs at Trinity College of Nursing and Health Sciences, log on to trinitycollegeqc.edu. Tracy, thank you so much for being here today and telling us all about it. I'd love to have you back and maybe try some of those hands-on,
absolutely
immersive experiences as well.
well. I think a lot of people would see that and totally be on board. Yeah. So thank you. Well, still to come in our next half hour of QCL, it is Child Abuse Awareness Month, and the Rock Island County Children's Advocacy Center is here with a closer look at services and the various ways we can show our support. And later, a special furniture sale this weekend only at Skeleton Key Art and Antiques. We'll preview what's available and check out the shop's amazing lineup of artists and vendors.
Live from the Quad Cities with Morgan Otier and Kyle Keel, this is Quad Cities Live.
Reducing trauma among children who experience abuse, that's really the mission of the Rock Island County Children's Advocacy Center. And here to tell us more is the director of the center, Marcy O'Brien. Marcy, thanks for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course. We're going to get to a whole bunch of things today, especially about the center itself. But first, you guys are going to be hosting next week a third annual breakfast fundraiser.
Yes, we are.
Okay, so you have done this a couple of times before. Talk a little bit about what happens at this event.
So the public is invited to come have breakfast with us. We have a breakfast buffet that's catered by DeBoard Catering, and then we'll do a short program where we're going to talk about what we do at the center, what our mission is, and then we have a guest speaker that comes in. And this year we have a guest speaker that was abused as a child by his soccer coach, and he's going to talk about that experience and how a Children's Advocacy Center would have benefited him if he could have had one at that time.
Well, and we'll definitely get into a little bit more of that later. The speaker itself, what an incredible story he has. It happens to be Child Abuse Awareness Month, so it's a perfect time to share more about your organization. So talk a little bit more about your mission there.
Yeah, so we serve Rock Island County, and we interview children under the age of 18 who are victims of abuse. Primarily, we do victims of sexual and physical abuse, and our interviews are only for investigations with law enforcement and DCFS. So if someone would think their child was abused, they would not be able just to call us to have an interview. They would need to make a report with one of them agencies. Mm-hmm. And then we do the interview for them agencies as a team. They come to our center. They're present for the interviews. They watch the interview on a closed circuit TV, and the child is aware of that. And they work as a team to work the investigation to determine what happened and to find the conclusion to it.
Okay. You guys call it a multidisciplinary team approach.
Yes.
So I assume what that means, having everybody involved. But what I think is really unique and special is that you have a highly trained interviewer.
Yes.
That is the one speaking with these kids. Tell us why that is so important.
It's really important for one, for the child to feel comfortable to tell their story. They're telling something that is the most horrific thing that's happened to someone. It's embarrassing a lot of times. A lot of times the children aren't aware that it was abuse, or it was consensual. And so to tell someone that, you know, you're telling something very intimate. Mm-hmm. So the person who's trained for this does it in a non-leading way that is able to stand up in court. And it's not the interviewer's job to determine if the child's telling the truth or not. It's up to the investigation to do that.
Okay.
So we just let the child tell their story for the investigators to go on. And then we work as a team with them. We also have the sex assault nurses from the hospital are part of our team. The law enforcement, DCFS, and the state's attorney are all part of our team for the investigations.
Okay, and what's the alternative, I guess, for a student, or not a student, but a child, who doesn't have access to an advocacy center like this? I mean, they're gonna have to tell this story much more often.
Prior to advocacy centers, kids were telling their stories between 4, 7, sometimes 30 times. They would, before an advocacy center, someone would report their child was abused, and the responding police officer would normally do the interview of the child. Mm-hmm. They would write up a report, and then a police detective would get that report. He would again interview the child. If child protection needed to be involved, they would make a report to them, who would then do a third interview.
Yeah.
And that's not counting state's attorneys, who would do the interviews to see if the child would be able to testify in court, mm-hmm. and if it was something they'd be able to testify towards. If they go to the hospital, they might be interviewed by the doctors and the same nurses. At school, if they disclose, they maybe were interviewed by a principal, a teacher,
it's just
a counselor, numerous interviews. Yes.
And just over and over again.
So we do one interview with all the parties that need to be there so that the child only has to tell their story one time.
Okay, amazing. So let's talk a little bit about what we need to be doing as a community before we get back to the event, because you did share some really important information with us prior to this interview today. Now, if we suspect a case of child abuse, we need to be reporting that immediately.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And we'll make sure that we have that phone number as well on the website after this interview. Now, what about if a child confides in us? There are some really good points that you provided. Talk about a few of those, because I think they could be counterintuitive, especially if you're like a parent or something.
Yeah, so if your child discloses abuse to you, first of all, listen to them and believe it.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing that you can do. And then you need to make sure the child knows that you, especially if you're not the caregiver, that you cannot keep that a secret, that you are going to have to report that, but your job is to help to do that, to keep them safe and to let them know. Mm-hmm. You need to let the child know that they can come to you with that and to trust you with that information.
Yeah.
And to be supportive.
Okay, so fundraising is obviously a huge part of your mission.
Yes, it is.
Which is where next week's breakfast event comes in. It's been successful, I'm sure, the last few years. So we talked a little bit about it already, but describe again the speaker, Kevin, to us, because now he actually is a prosecutor.
Correct, yes.
And he works with crimes against children. So this has all kind of been a proponent for him to fight for kids.
Yeah, it kind of came full circle. So as a child, he was abused by his soccer coach. And so he disclosed that, and he did not have the services of a children's advocacy center at that time because we were not everywhere like we are now. And so as an adult, he has worked through his abuse, and he became a federal prosecutor, and then he prosecuted crimes against children.
Amazing. We actually have a little bit of a clip from him speaking at a previous event, so let's take a listen to that.
I was 9 years old. He was a position of authority, an important person in my life. I never contemplated for a second that he wasn't telling me the truth. What Randy would do was go on to continue to lie, to manipulate me, to groom me, and ultimately to sexually assault me.
It's awful, it's tragic, but it happens, and fortunately you folks are here to help, you know, kind of pick up the pieces and write things again for these kids. So I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to support the third annual Believe in the Brave Breakfast Fundraiser. That's what it's called. It is happening next Tuesday, April 23rd from 7 to 9 at the University Club in Moline. To purchase tickets supporting the Children's Advocacy Center, you just visit the website on your screen, believe24.givesmart.com, or you can text believe24 to 76278. And of course, to learn more about the Children's Advocacy Center and the various ways you can show your support year-round, visit riccac.org or just call the number right there at the bottom of your screen. Marcy, thank you. Thanks for all you do, and thank your staff for us as well for all the hard work that they do.
Thank you for having me here. I appreciate that.
Of course. Well, coming up next on Quad Cities Live, it is set to be an exciting weekend at Skeleton Key Art and Antiques in Rock Island. We're getting the details on the upcoming furniture sale. That's after the break.
You're watching Quad Cities Live.
There is always something fun and exciting happening at Skeleton Key Art and Antiques in Rock Island, and this weekend is no exception.
No, it is not. Owner Brandy Vandewalle is joining us today. Brandy, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, so good to see you here in the studio today. Because when you're here, you bring lovely, beautiful things with you that we love to talk about. What you could not bring with you physically today, though, is a large piece of furniture.
No, it turns out it doesn't move so easily for a five-minute segment.
It's not super easy, but you guys are having a two-day furniture sale.
We are. This Saturday and Sunday in the store, we're going to have most of the large pieces of furniture are going to be on some sort of a discount.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're seeing some images on the screen right now of some of the items that you have in the store. They are absolutely beautiful. It is going to pop up. Claire and I both have our eye on that bar cart right there.
Yeah, right?
It's nice.
It's beautiful.
And we're to that season now for entertaining, you know, so I think it won't be there long. Maybe come quick.
I know. Like, maybe I go Saturday as soon as you open.
There you go. Well, tell us a little bit more about what you have at Skeleton Key. What do you provide for the community?
Sure. So we are a vendor mall.
Yeah.
But we are specifically, we sell specifically art, antiques, vintage, handcrafted. So everything we have is either locally made or vintage and antique.
I love that.
So what I've got with us today is a variety of things that are locally made, locally crafted. What I don't have with me are many of the vintage and antique pieces, but those, we have lots of that in the store as well.
Yeah, lots to peruse in the store. Obviously not easy to transport because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to hurt anything.
Fragile.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what you brought here today to display.
So I tried to bring a variety of some of our different local businesses and makers that we have in the store. So what you're looking at there, that's from, is it pronounced Macabre? The Macabre Librarian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have heard of this, and it
They're fabulous.
Super cool.
So she takes used books, and she writes a little synopsis on the front, puts a little tea bag on the front, little sticker, wraps them up, and then she calls them a blind date with the book, which is
the cutest thing
ever.
That's what I was thinking.
And I went to a yoga studio, and they kind of feature that as an event as well. That's pretty cool.
She's wonderful and has those, and also has with us a number of vintage books. So those are a lot of fun to peruse as well.
I just love the idea of doing that, and it tells you on the front too. You know what kind of like genre it is, so you know a little bit about what
you're interested. They make a great little gift.
Yeah, they do.
You know, just for a book lover in your life, a lot of fun.
Very cool. You've got some jewelry here and some beautiful frames.
We are definitely thinking spring around the store. Easter's over, but we're still holding on to those spring vibes, the bright colors, working towards summer. And I'm really in love with these earrings that have been brought in by the One-Eyed Buzzard. She never disappoints, but these earrings in particular are just so summery.
They're beautiful.
And fun.
And I think like the whole sunflower and daisy theme.
It's everywhere right now.
Yeah, right now.
Yes.
Beautiful. Okay.
these crack me up.
The big topic of conversation today.
They've been a big topic of conversation since you set them up. They're adorable.
Pop out at you.
Yeah. Tell everybody what these guys are.
So what I think they are, I think they're the Yip Yips from Sesame Street.
Oh, yes.
If you guys are old enough to remember the Yip Yips. The yip. Bring.
Yes. They're so cute.
Yeah, I think they're just a really, really cute little piece that you could use in so many ways.
Yeah,
you know, you
say.
Could put a plant in that.
Yeah.
You could use it as a little catch-all. I had somebody who bought some. She was going to put them on the back of her car seats for her kids to just tuck their
that
things
is
in.
The best
their
idea.
Their ear pods. Really, yes. Chargers.
Really good idea.
Yeah.
I've got to get
toys.
One for my daughter because
there's
all that
so
tiny little jewelry and everything like that.
Yes. Easy to get lost.
So cute.
Yeah.
Okay. And before we run out of time, talk about what we've got over here. Just like a beautiful ornament over here.
We do. So those are little sun catchers that are made by one of our local artist. Her name's Amber. She has cacti that she makes out of stained glass as well.
That's beautiful.
But for right now, she does different things throughout the season, and right now she's got some flowers. She also has some that are on stakes that you could put either outside or in a house plant. Super cute. But these are just little sun catchers you could hang anywhere you wanted.
Wow. Yeah. It's going to be a fun weekend for
you. It's going to be fun.
At Skeleton Key.
Yeah.
And of course, if we had more time, we would be able to look forward to the artist market that is going to be starting
in June.
Yeah. But that means that we're going to get to have you back in our studio
can't
to talk all about that. So we can't wait.
Yeah.
The Skeleton Key is open at 10 to 5 Saturday, noon to 4 on Sunday. And for updates, of course, follow them on Facebook. Brandy, again, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
We just appreciate you. And we appreciate you. Thank you so much for watching today.
Yes, we do. Your local news at 4 is coming up next. Have a great day.
These are adorable.